Hello, everybody, and welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. I'm Terry Patton, the creator and host of this series. And for anyone who doesn't already know me, I'm also the founder and teacher of Integral Spiritual Practice and the author of Integral Life Practice with Ken Wilber. I convened this series to serve the evolution of consciousness and culture by creating a deep public dialogue about how higher consciousness can play the key role, we hope, or at least a key role, in helping human beings rise to meet our current challenges and to make as benign as possible a transition to a sustainable human presence on our planet. I've held over 50 profound and enlivening conversations on this topic with many of today's leading spiritual teachers and thought leaders. And once you've registered at beyondawakeningseries.com, they're all available for free download at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. This morning, I am delighted to be joined by Candace O'Denver, and we're going to continue to deepen that discussion in a conversation we've decided to title Open-Ended Knowledge Creation. The way this will work is that I'll introduce Candace, and then she and I will dialogue for about an hour, and then I'll make some announcements, and we'll spend about half an hour taking your questions, and we'll finish up in about 90 minutes. Candace O'Denver, in my opinion, is a really rare being. She's a brilliant, extremely well-educated mother and grandmother, and a true Renaissance woman whose teachings are already serving people all over the world. I would describe her teaching work as one of the most innovative spiritual teachings in the world today. But Candace rarely uses that word, spiritual, at all. Her unique and original approach is all about cutting to the root, using fresh, direct, intuitive, and universal language like clarity, open intelligence, innate joy, being of benefit. And it draws on her lifelong familiarity with computers, the internet, and information theory, as well as over 40 years of deep study of the implications of critical theory, art, and literature, and her deep engagement with the highest spiritual teachings, such as Mengadge, I don't quite say that properly, it's a Tibetan word, one of the highest expressions of Dzogchen, which originally came from China. And she studied critical theory while she was a collaborative graduate student doing coursework at the University of California, Berkeley, Stanford, and the California College of the Arts, with a graduate thesis titled Metaspace, the Basic Space of Phenomena. In my opinion, her work expresses the highest non-dual spiritual teachings, but she expresses it in entirely universal terms without the usual spiritual associations and baggage. And she has gathered around her a team of people that has invented a computationally intensive comparative analysis that she calls an algorithm for open intelligence and spontaneous altruism. In related research, the system of instruction that she originated is producing off-the-chart levels of life satisfaction and flourishing, as well as a balanced lifestyle of benefit to all. She calls the system that she teaches Balanced View, and that's also the name of a worldwide organization that operates now in 180 countries. The first time we spoke, we talked about an era of great benefit. That phrase describes this current emerging era of universal civilization, according to Candace, and her Balanced View research is deepening and expanding in lots of different ways, some of which we'll be discussing shortly. She lives not far from me in Northern California and teaches internationally, sometimes from the Balanced View centers in Sweden and England and India. So I am so happy to welcome you, Candace, as my guest this morning.
Thank you, Terry. I'm very happy to be with you and to be with everyone joining in today.
Well, as we begin, it might be lovely, especially for listeners who aren't already familiar with your work, if we could begin this conversation with a description of your core teaching, brief moments, many times.
The core teaching of Balanced View is what we call the Four Mainstays, and the Four Mainstays are short moments of open intelligence. The actual training media would be number two. Number three, the trainers, the very skilled trainers, and four, our worldwide community. And the Four Mainstays represent the core algorithm. Short moments of intelligence, open intelligence, repeated many times, become automatic. And that is our core teaching, that open intelligence becomes automatic by instinctively recognizing it in short moments many times. And really, it's important to know that open intelligence isn't something that we need to attain or get to, but that it's present always in every moment. And if we don't know what that is, then it's very simple to introduce ourselves to open intelligence by simply stopping thinking. When we stop thinking, and we can all join together and do that right now, stop thinking. What remains is simple alertness, clarity, and cognizance, the basic power to know. And that itself is open intelligence, which represents all correct knowledge. And like you mentioned in your introduction, Terry, in your lovely introduction, this is really the core of what you call beyond awakening, contemporary practice of human nature. It's really the practice of human nature that we're talking about.
And the individual who begins to practice this simple matter of returning to the clarity that's there between thoughts when we're not thinking is something that still allows us to function. So it's a practice that people can do in any moment throughout the functional demands of everyday life. That is, it's a 24/7 practice. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. It is a 24/7 practice, and the open intelligence that is present when we're not thinking is also present when we're thinking. So what is present in the gap is also present when the gap is filled with all kinds of thoughts, emotions, sensations, or other experience. We just gather all those together and call them data. And everything that appears within open intelligence is its light signals or data. And so this radically simplifies the experience of what human nature is. Open intelligence and its light signals of data.
So it might be good if you could elaborate even a little more and describe the experiential process by which an individual might come to experience this this shift. Like I'm going to present myself as someone who's brand new to this teaching, who's hearing about it for the first time. Here I've been used to thinking of my thoughts and my feelings and my experience as completely my own. I don't have much experience of open intelligence this is a new idea to me. I might feel a certain kind of sense of clarity when I stop thinking, but how do I begin to experience this limitless source of beneficial intelligence simply by doing this practice of brief moments many times? And how does that shift my experience, just from my point of view as this separately experiencing individual? How does this larger, freer intelligence show up and grow? Can you kind of narrate how that might appear from that point of view?
Yes, I'd be happy to. We started out by stopping thinking in order to identify the basic intelligence, which is the open intelligence at the basis of all of our experience, including our experience of ourself as an individual. And so by instinctively recognizing open intelligence through brief moments, those moments become longer and longer spontaneously. Spontaneously, open intelligence becomes predominant rather than all the thoughts and emotions, sensations, and other experience, rather than all the data. Open intelligence then is predominant, outshining all data. Initially, we may instinctively recognize open intelligence, and by that we see that when the next thought comes, open intelligence doesn't go anywhere. The data appear, whatever they are, they're spontaneously self-releasing. The here and now is spontaneously self-releasing. There's no way to keep it in place. If we tried to keep the here and now in place, it would be completely impossible. And so very quickly, the open intelligence that we've recognized by simply stopping thinking, it becomes present and predominant for longer and longer periods of time until all time is outshone by open intelligence. And what outshining means is that our intelligence opens up and that it's no longer closed in on our personal experience of the world. That's included, of course, but we are living as open intelligence. And that is our primary reference, so to speak, rather than the limited closed idea of self-focus. And by simply by recognizing open intelligence, we experience the natural flourishing at the basis of our reality. And this is what reality actually is. Reality actually is open intelligence. It is our flourishing nature. And maybe we haven't experienced a sense of flourishing before. And so it becomes very, very obvious in the practice. Short moments, repeated many times, open intelligence becomes obvious all the time.
So that the as open intelligence is experienced, or it's really beyond that, open intelligence is prior to the experience, but as there is this, as open intelligence comes forward, it is as if it begins to become the background of all experience, and then over time even the foreground, such that the data is not tending to occlude that open intelligence or take, distract us from or leave us out of contact with that ground.
Exactly, Terry. We are living as open intelligence, and we experience everything just with newness and freshness. And the frames of reference, conceptual concerns about everything that is occurring are completely dispelled, and we're able to create knowledge on the fly. And this is really what open-ended knowledge creation is. It's the creation of knowledge from open intelligence and as open intelligence. And in this way, we have incredible discernment and clarity about all our experience. Whether I'm here talking with you today, or with my grandchildren, or my dog, who I'm now pushing around in a stroller, there's the ability to spontaneously respond to circumstances as they occur. Like right now, the dog is here and she's very active. She wants to join in the conversation, so she's making a few noises in the background. We have all kinds of beings listening in.
I think this is very, very rich. So when you say knowledge creation, is the kind of knowledge that you are speaking about inclusive of scientific discoveries? Is it inclusive? And there are certain kinds of scientific discoveries that come from insight, a more holistic intelligence, and I could certainly see how that comes from open intelligence very easily. But there's other kinds of scientific learning that comes from exhaustive trials of thousands and thousands of cases, and seems like it comes from following the procedure, perhaps even rather robotically, but just going through all the iterations and eliminating the other options. It's less easy for me to see how that comes from open intelligence, you know, everything arises perhaps in that open intelligence, but the spontaneous knowledge creation, it would seem to me, might account for knowledge that requires a more open consciousness, a more present and spontaneous aliveness, and therefore a certain kind of creativity. But I think you're making a more radical claim than just that this increases your ability to be present and conscious, but that there's something about how all knowledge arises that relates to open intelligence. And I'm curious just to invite you to speak about all of that.
Thank you, Terry. Indeed, scientific and technological advancement holds open intelligence as crucial to its open-ended knowledge creation. And so without open intelligence, scientific and technological advancement cannot occur. And it doesn't matter whether it's repetitive trials of some kind, like clinical trials, or whether it's a more insight-oriented discovery of an algorithm. Open intelligence is equally key. And certainly in our comparative analysis that we've done and the comprehensive map that we've developed over 40 years, there has been a great deal of repetitive research and looking at all kinds of data as it channels in about what human nature really is, what people really want to know about their own nature, and how best to communicate the reality of human nature to what we have now, which is a global human community. A global human community gathered together in the initial stages of the era of great benefit. And what this means is that open intelligence is bursting forth from within. It's empowering human nature from within. And we really don't have to do anything. It's an evolutionary imperative that our intelligence change in this way. And so we, in the instinctive recognition of open intelligence, become aware of this occurrence, the actual experiential occurrence that is it's absolutely included. Experience is rich with open intelligence. They're inseparable, like the sky and the color blue. And so there's no way to separate data from open intelligence. the data are the shining forth of open intelligence, the very liveliness of open intelligence. It doesn't matter what they are. Everything is included. And so whether it's the repetitive nature of scientific experiment, or whether it's inside oriented scientific and technological experiment, both of these are equally included in open-ended knowledge creation. What we're talking about really is breaking through the glass ceiling of what many scientists already know. Many scientists already know the singularity of all data. This is one of the primary scientific discoveries that is relied upon today, singularity. However, applying that to one's own experience is what is crucial here. Not just knowing it intellectually, knowing that singularity exists intellectually, but instinctively realizing it as the basis of all one's own experience, instinctively recognizing open intelligence as the basis of all experience. Then the scientific breakthroughs come about. As open intelligence grows more and more expansive, there's a sense of its inexhaustibility in terms of knowledge creation. Open intelligence is an inexhaustible knowledge creator. It already contains all knowledge, the knowledge that has been discovered and the knowledge yet to be discovered. So by simply relying on open intelligence, it becomes more and more the instinctive reality of one's existence. It becomes obvious, predominant in all of life without ever thinking about it or trying to recognize it at all. And this is absolutely key, that there is an inexhaustibility. There is no destination.
Mm. So I think that this is very, very profound and very interesting. It reminds me of a claim that was made by an information scientist named David Chalmers. He is a highly respected academic, and he's introduced a theory of consciousness that places information in the central role and suggests that both matter and subjective experience are double aspects of information. He's suggesting a conception of the world on which information is truly fundamental, and it has two basic aspects corresponding to the physical and the phenomenal features of the world, that both consciousness, which is phenomenal, and matter, which is physical, are in some sense the result of a world built out of information. And that kind of relates to something Ray Kurzweil has said, that living creatures are information. Biology is an information process. Now, some people would regard this as reductive and materialistic, but it's not exactly, because it really is not saying that the physical is consciousness is an epiphenomenon of physical processes. It's more or less asserting that information is more primary. It seems to me that you're speaking about something a little different than Chalmers, perhaps, in which consciousness or open intelligence is inseparable from information, and that information implies consciousness, and that resting in consciousness rests you at the source of information. But perhaps I'm not perceiving these distinctions exactly. I want to give you an opportunity to comment and perhaps elaborate.
Oh, certainly. I'm not sure when those particular topics were written about by Chalmers and Kurzweil, but I am familiar with their current thought, and both of them very much regard singularity as a destination of human beings. Now, when it comes down to information theory, of course, different theorists have different ways of describing information theory. And Chalmers and Kurzweil are two of those, and perhaps leading the group is Luciano Floridi, who is at Oxford, and who is proposing a philosophy of information. Now, in the scholarly scheme of things, knowledge is built of data and information. So in a conceptual world, in order to get to knowledge, first data are required, and data build information, and then good information builds good knowledge. And so that's kind of the fundamental way of looking at it, the three fundamentals. Now, like you said, to look at it in an entirely reductive way and I'm saying this, you didn't say it, it is crucial. To look at data in a reductive way is crucial, because if we don't look at data in a reductive way as the actual signals or codes of open intelligence, then we can never arrive at correct information and correct knowledge. So we need to be at the profound basis of all information and all knowledge, right at the basis, open intelligence and data. This is where all information and knowledge spring forth. The singularity is the unifying factor, the open intelligence at the basis. Without open intelligence, no, there would be no data. We are intelligent beings. Primarily, we are intelligent beings. Our mind, our speech, our body, our qualities, our activities are all data, information, and knowledge springing forth in open intelligence, shining forth the very liveliness of open intelligence itself. And again, to read about these things in an intellectual way is often very enlivening and inspiring. However, we must reduce it to our own experience in order to be true open-ended knowledge creators and open-ended benefit creators. We need to actually instinctively recognize and realize open intelligence as the basis of what we are.
Now, this is very provocative and interesting, and it reminds me of some of the recent findings in neuroscience. It reminds me of my last Beyond Awakening conversation with Peter Bauman, too, in which I felt that I'm seeing a new emerging free transpersonal clarity in which the directionality of inquiries that seem, on the one hand, scientific, neuroscience, just like kind of breaking down our experience, noticing what's sometimes called the user illusion, the way that we get a sense of ourselves as a separate person, as a kind of epiphenomenon of our neurological and perceptual processes, and how a kind of relaxation into raw experience through a lot of the neuroscientists are very influenced by basic Buddhist meditation practices like mindfulness, in which now there are conferences, Wisdom 2.0, for example, Peter's Being Human conference, in which a kind of neutral clarity, in which simply the power of recognition is brought to human experience more and more powerfully as a way of liberating our capacities as fully as possible. it reminds me that in some sense there's a convergence perhaps afoot between that and a much more passionate and emotionally alive kind of inquiry that isn't so much about stripping away the personal, but about coming alive as the core of what is most personal in our what Ken Wilber calls eros, that is the force of evolution, the evolutionary impulse itself, simply wanting to see, to know, to self-actualize, to be a source of benefit, of service, to give, that the core of what motivates almost everyone in their personal sense of mission and meaning and joy and delight and even self-expression, that is the fulfillment of the impulse that feels most personal, perhaps can converge with this apparently transpersonal and impersonal process of simple raw recognition. And this possibility, that kind of a convergence would be of profoundly influential and groundbreaking in cultural terms were it to satisfy the apparently contradictory criteria of very logical, scientific, and technological people with that orientation and people with an orientation that's more ecstatic and mystical and spiritual and people with an orientation that's more aesthetic and artistic and people with an orientation that's more about social change and benefit to all. And I think you're suggesting that this kind of a convergence can be arrived at through exactly what you're describing, but I'd like to invite you to elaborate on that if you would like.
I'm enjoying listening to you, Terry, and I really hear very deeply everything that you're saying, and the evolutionary imperative is afoot. We cannot stop it. The evolutionary imperative is changing the very way we think about everything, including ourselves. And in this evolutionary imperative, open intelligence is becoming obvious to everyone, whether it's being recognized right now or not. It will be recognized by everyone. In the same way, when human beings were four-footed, not everyone arose at once. First, a few people stood up on 2 feet, and then others said, I can do that too. And so the same is the case with this evolutionary imperative. It is bursting forth from within, outshining all current forms of knowledge with a new form of knowledge. A form of knowledge where self-concern and anthropocentrism isn't so key, isn't so factored in, but all data are allowed to be as they are. All data are accepted into the purview of rich and deep and totally inclusive experience.
And if we bring that around to some of the points that you made in our last dialogue, particularly in regards to how points of view are, in a sense, exhausting themselves in this age. We had a conversation about the overwhelming amount of information and data that everyone is exposed to, how we live interruption-driven lives, that there are some very interesting books like The Shallows or others on how our attention span is reducing and the there's a kind of overwhelm of inputs, interruptions, and the numbers of different perspectives that we're exposed to if we are intelligently making use of all our internet connections and all of the not only is scientific knowledge doubling in less than a decade according to some measures, but the numbers of inputs that we're exposed to are proliferating. And the idea then, I think, is that these that points that we are seeing something about the very nature of points of view, the very nature of perspectives is revealing something about itself to us, and that this process, instead of just being one of making us kind of jangled and crazy and distracted and losing sense of the wholeness of things, although sometimes we have a subjective experience something like that along the way, is actually one in which open intelligence more and more and more is able to notice the very nature of all that information and data, and perhaps something then relaxes culturally, and instead of us being more and more stressed, we become in a sense more and more wise and more able to function, and there's a resourcefulness, and in a sense I think I heard you contradict the pessimism that is often accompanies this examination of the phenomenon of overwhelming inputs. So I wanted to invite you to connect this up to everything you've just said, and perhaps help me understand, and everyone understand, how, in a way, we're talking on the one hand about open-ended knowledge creation, and on the other about the exhaustion of points of view, which sound like they're contradictory. And how are they a single process?
They are a single process in that open intelligence is all-encompassing, inclusive of everything, including excessive pessimism. And so we need to realize that this excessive pessimism and negativity, these are data as well. And if we stop there with looking at everything through the eyes of pessimism and negativity, then our view is very severely limited. And it's very important to allow open intelligence to take over there, and just to see that the pessimism is really a form of internalized oppression that is very much part of the current type of knowledge creation, the type of knowledge creation we've been using up until now. You could say, in a way, it becomes coarse and primitive in open intelligence, because open intelligence is so much more radically inclusive and all-encompassing of all data in its experience, not just certain kinds of data, but all data, including the pessimism and negativity. And by virtue of its exposure, it exhausts itself, just like the here and now exhausts itself. It's very similar. The outshining of the here and now, it is similar to daylight outshining the planets and stars that are so visible at night. At night, all kinds of planets and stars are visible. Some of the planets and stars are benign in their appearance. Others are very active, and supernovas are exploding here, there, and everywhere. Regardless, everything is outshone by daylight. And similarly, in a very natural process, open intelligence as an evolutionary imperative is shining forth from within all data, all experience. And it's simply the recognition of this that is taking over human intelligence at this time. allowing for a much more open type of knowledge creation and thus benefit creation. Like you said, we are all inspired to be of benefit. Just naturally, we are inspired to be of benefit. And our abilities as knowledge creators and benefit creators is greatly enhanced by the view of open intelligence.
That was beautiful, Candace. I really loved everything that you just said. And yet there was one thing that I didn't quite grok right away. Like, I can see the exhaustion of points of view, and when I'm hearing that, I'm imagining that it's really just got to do with the recognition of the nature of those points of view, and therefore I'm not as subject to them. I have a freer relationship to them. And therefore I'm somehow less wedded to them. But then you talked about the here and now exhausting itself. And somehow that, I don't want to equate the here and now with points of view. The here and now feels so rich and alive, and it's here and now that open intelligence is even present. And it is arriving in the here and now more and more fully, and perhaps being less identified with points of view that I'm usually enjoying and feeling liberated by. And here you're speaking about the here and now exhausting itself in just the same terms that points of view exhaust themselves. What do you mean by that?
Well, the here and now is indeed another point of view. And so the view, the all-inclusive view of open intelligence includes all data, all points of view. And it's at this crucial juncture of the here and now and open intelligence that we really have the experience of breaking free, like you said, being free to the point of really not noticing the data in the same way that we did before. We are alive and rich in the flow of data, as the flow of data, able to encompass it all and arrive at new conclusions, beneficial conclusions for everyone, uncontrived conclusions. And we were talking earlier about scientific experiment, and even in repetitive scientific experience, breaking through to new conclusions. And certainly open intelligence has always been part of great insights that have led to incredible discoveries. And many scientists, including Albert Einstein was keenly aware that open intelligence was the source of the equations and the formula. And when he spent his lifetime, after his early lifetime, when he made most of his discoveries and did a great deal of his writing, he was attempting a comparative analysis that would allow him to experience open intelligence at all times rather than only in the moments of insight. And so I feel that this what his talking openly about this and sharing in a uniquely human conversation and dialogue his struggle with this, I think this was a key turning point. It was the tipping point of open intelligence becoming very vital and alive in perhaps a way even Albert Einstein couldn't understand at that point, but that open intelligence coming very alive within human experience as the ground of all human experience rather than obsessive self-concern as the ground of human experience or concern with self and a few intimate others, but rather the like you said, the passionate view of open intelligence that is very inclusive of everything and is very naturally and spontaneously beneficial. So there's no need to cultivate benefit, as benefit is engineered in. It's already embedded in our very nature. It's simply a matter of relaxing while it frees itself radically and exponentially throughout all of what we are, what we do, what we say, what we think.
Now, this is interesting. One of the paradoxes that I've noticed is that there is a debate among some people who say we must passionately take responsibility for trying to enact a wholeness and harmony and love and freedom and truth and beauty and goodness, you know, that we have a responsibility, that evolution proceeds, and we can trust evolution partly because we're here caring and trying to do our best, that that's part of how evolution can be trusted. And way of seeing things would also say, if you say you can trust evolution, everything is occurring just exactly as it needs to, some people saying, oh my God, we have way too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Oh my God, this fiat currency with these exaggerated indebtednesses that seem to be unsustainable. This is a problem. There's too much plastic in the oceans. We're overfishing, this and that. That this alarm over those things, these two are part of how evolution is proceeding, and that our distress over that and our intention to do something about it, and even our projecting out the disastrous implications if these trends continue, and our efforts to avert those things. The pessimism, if our optimism is to be grounded, it can't be. We can't be saying to everybody, just relax, everything is okay and will be okay regardless of what you do. We have to be saying, trust that everything will be fine, partly because you're inserting yourself with a passionate will to make it okay, and yet you don't need to bring anxiety to that process. The issue would be just to diffuse anxiety, but not necessarily a sense of responsibility and alarm. How do you feel about that? How would you comment on that debate?
My comment on that debate would be that our actual potency and power is in open intelligence. And it may involve a paradox indeed that we relax our self-concern into open intelligence. However, we're also relaxing ourselves into a very potent force for change. And so it is in this very relaxation that we find a pervasive openness that allows us to include all data, information, and knowledge in our knowledge creation. And subsume all current forms of data, information, and knowledge creation in a more comprehensive potency found in the basis of open intelligence. And so our concerns for insurmountable problems are very natural as part of are wanting to be of benefit, and our willingness to find solutions, to have a solution orientation in terms of these critical concerns, this also is imperative. And so the solution orientation, the potency of solution orientation is found in open intelligence.
And therefore, that passionate care that arises in the individual who senses a sense of personal responsibility can channel itself simply into recognizing their own concern, this whole situation, as a point of view arising in open intelligence, and appreciating that this data that they're responding to, and even their passion, are grounded in a present intelligence, and which is effulgent, which is full of light, full of benefit, full of grace, full of all-accomplishing power, and that a sense of trust in that is part of relating to it, that subtracting a sense of trust in that is a misperception, and therefore a way of letting your passion turn in upon itself and not be effective. And that therefore my passion drives me beyond the contraction, the internalized oppression of the negativity, into trust of the all-accomplishing beneficial power of intelligence itself. And I can simply harmonize with that and let it flow through me as me. Is that, am I hearing you and describing how one might intelligently respond? Is that the import, in effect, of what you just said?
Yes, it is, Terry. That was very beautifully stated. It's a wonderful libretto.
I so love all our conversations, Candace. It's just a joy.
Terry, excuse me. I wanted to introduce one phrase that came up for me out of what you were saying, and that is perpetual optimism, that everything is really grounded in the perpetual optimism of all accomplishing activity that is allowed by open intelligence.
Beautiful. Yes. So this relates to your assertion of this era of great benefit ahead, and that you can look at the breakdown of unsustainable systems in human culture and the sense of, and I imagine you do resonate with the tremendous compassion that people feel for intensifying human suffering in various forms, in various, and not just human, animal suffering, all of the different ways that are imbalanced and unsustainable presence on the planet, you know, cries out for adjustment and correction, that you're essentially saying that care about that, and that even taking seriously some of the apparently negative trends are entirely coincident with optimism. We don't have to look away from the negative data. We just discover its nature and are present to it even more forcefully in this disposition of perpetual optimism.
Exactly, Terry. It allows us to extend ourselves tremendously, our whole idea of ourselves, beyond our own limited sense of self-suffering, to embrace all of the suffering of everyone. So if I or someone else were to experience extreme pessimism about what's going on as a self-concern, to then realize that and extend this to the flow of all data, that it isn't just me alone that has this negativity or pessimism, but it is a part of the natural flow of data of all beings, and therefore open intelligence embraces all of the negativity of all kinds and overcomes it.
I'd like to extend our conversation just a little bit longer so that I could raise two other points, at least briefly. One of them is that I've had some interesting dialogues here on Beyond Awakening in which people, you know, there's a criticism of what's called spiritual bypassing, the idea that you go to the universal in order to bypass the immediate practical work that you need to do, whether that's psychological work or whether that's simply practically getting your house in order and dealing with the challenges in your life or even, you know, social challenges, that spiritual bypassing kind of suffuses everything in a rosy Pollyanna-ish glow and has you not as arrived here in the here and now. And one of the ways that that critique, that spiritual bypassing critique, has been expressed is the idea that we care and we mobilize our resources when we feel that we uniquely have a role, a creative role to play, that our there's a language in the integral community, the unique self. I wrote an epilogue to in the book I wrote with Ken Wilber with by that title. And so this is it a bypassing of that kind of caring, I'm needed here, and my own unique way of being has its own contribution to the greater whole, and that therefore I'm needed, and that sense of personal call and personal passion, is that somehow being bypassed by this sense that open intelligence, which is obviously a universal, is the source of all good things, and therefore maybe my own unique contribution is less important. I'm just like one of many channels for something universal and therefore less important and less needed in my uniqueness.
I would definitely agree with the basic notion of a unique and important role of each individual. That as we as individuals instinctively recognize the potency, the actual raw power of our open intelligence, we become keenly aware of our own strengths, gifts, and talents. Aware of strengths, gifts, and talents perhaps that we did not know that we had. And this is where the role of community and teachers can be very, very important, because very often a teacher can see many of the strengths, gifts, and talents that we cannot see. And I know a key role of our teachers is to support people by giving them experiences, tasks that they want to do, but they don't really feel capable of doing it. However, it's clear that they are capable, and so that supporting people to not bypass anything, but to include everything, to include all of their own personal history in the flow of data, to include everything that's happening now, everything that they might project for the future. All of this is key and crucial. The crucial juncture is the very individual. The crucial juncture of data and open intelligence is the individual human being. That is how critical the individual human being is. That we are knowledge creators, unique knowledge creators, and each one of us, we have a very important role in that knowledge and benefit creation that is especially unique to us. There is no other human being or any kind of being anywhere who has exactly the same flow of data as another being. So each being is entirely unique and entirely exposed in their role as a knowledge and benefit creator.
Beautiful, Candace. Thank you. Well, we're past the time when I should be having our break for announcements. Much as I want to ask you about transhumanism, I'll hold that for now. And if you have any questions for Candace or for me, please simply send them in by typing in the Instant Teleseminar window, which many of you already have done. But if you phoned in, you just press *2 on your keypad, and that will raise your hand. And I'd like to make sure you know how to find out more about Candace's work. So all you have to do is to go to balancedview.com, and there you can download the ebook, Open Intelligence Now.
Very important here.
Oh, really? Balancedview.com works for me. Okay.
Oh, yes, it automatically goes over, but our site is balancedview.org.
Okay, balancedview.org.
And we will have a full recording on our website as well.
Great.
Yes.
And there's also this ebook, Open Intelligence Now, and other resources. So you're encouraged to do that. Do you still have the movies of the virtual events from Second Life on Balanced View, Candace?
Oh, yes. We have an abundance of screenshots as well as movies.
Okay, great. And are there also some other additional audio recordings available on Balanced View?
Thousands of
okay.
audio recordings available on
There
Balanced
you go.
View. Yes.
Now, if you're interested in my work, there are a couple of upcoming events. I'm going to be offering a 5-day deep experiential seminar on integral leadership at Hollyhock Farm in British Columbia, Canada, in June 10th through 15th. And this is the one event that I'll be offering this year where you can work in person with me in depth and explore and deepen your own purpose and work and leadership and practice together in a very beautiful place in a nurturing container on Cortes Island off the Vancouver Island. Second, I've been invited to conduct a seminar on integral life practice in Brazil this July. July 25th through 29th, there'll be a group of 20 or so people who'll be gathering with me to practice while we go upriver on the Amazon from Manaus, Brazil. And you can find out more about that on my website, too. And then finally, I want to mention that I'll be participating in the Integral Community Seminar sponsored by Next Step Integral in Colorado this August. So you can find out more information about all these events and learn more about my work at terrypatton.com, and just click events. Please stay on the call. At the end, I'll tell you a little more about some upcoming dialogues, including one in 2 weeks with John Bunzel, the founder of Simpol, which is a way for conscious people to actually think globally and act effectively locally. And then I'll be talking soon with some other exciting guests I'll tell you about at the end of this call. And then we'll open up the lines so that those of us who've been on this call can hear each other's voices at least briefly while we all say goodbye. Okay. Let's take a look at our questions. There are quite a few here that people have asked online. Let's see. We've got just a couple of voice questions. So I'm going to go to the online questions. Actually, this one is quite poignant, and it comes from another part of the world, from Dubai. Bridget is asking, when is information and knowledge enough? When do you know you have arrived? It seems to me that the more I want to learn and know, the more separate I feel. That's from Bridget in Dubai.
Thank you for your question, Bridget. Certainly the traditional types of educational methodologies have a flow to them that really does make information and knowledge seem like a never-ending process, that we will never know enough. We will never have enough information. We will never be done or finished. And that can produce a great deal of anxiety and also exhaustion. And so it's very important to here to rely on open intelligence, to relax the need to know, the need to understand, into open intelligence and allow open intelligence to take over the process of information and knowledge creation. Open intelligence is at the very basis of the liveliness of all data, information, and knowledge. And so the most expansive view we can possibly have of that data, information, and knowledge is in open intelligence itself. Open intelligence, contrary to the constant need to acquire more information and more knowledge, open intelligence knowledge creation is relaxed, user-friendly, extremely potent, and has a course of its own, just like a river naturally finds its way to the ocean. And so this powerful course of its own knowledge creation is what open intelligence brings to our life, instead of the exhaustion of never being able to acquire enough information and knowledge, or the right kind of information and knowledge. Open intelligence is an entirely distinct and more comprehensive form of knowledge creation.
Beautiful. You know, there's another question that's sort of parallel to this, and this comes to us from Sweden, from Eva-Lena Melstedt, who asks, I identify myself with what I've completed throughout the day, for the day to be felt as successful or not. I'm quite weak, burned out since a long time, so whenever I can do more things or enlarge my safety space, it's a joy and a pleasure. And easily the other way around, less than wished for from a basic life leads to unhappiness. Can you please comment on that so that I can release this belief about myself and my life?
Eva-Lena, thank you for taking the time to join in and to write so clearly and specifically what your concern is. You, I can see, are right at the crux here of really recognizing the contents of your life and the flow of your life, and everything is very clear and obvious to you. The data flow is very clear and obvious to you, and it is now important to rely on open intelligence, to relax completely in this potency of open intelligence that will give you the passion and a sense of the ability to accomplish anything you set out to do in a very effortless way. And so you see, this is very distinct from feeling burnt out at the end of the day, because each day is closed with a sense of complete satisfaction and fulfillment, and each day is begun with the trust that it will include satisfaction and fulfillment. And so you see, as human beings, as the creatures that we are, the very tender and sensitive creatures, this comes up on us, most of us, slowly. So we begin to recognize slowly that we indeed are resting significantly and potently in the flourishing source of everything, and that that really is our reality. And so to respond to your question, yes, this is the essence of what you are, and this is what will bring you that a sense of complete satisfaction and fulfillment in all that you do, even if you may do things that you regret. Still, you will see that they have a purpose to inform a solution orientation and a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. Where you live in Sweden, there are many, many balanced view communities all over the country of Sweden. And worldwide, there are 6,000 balanced view communities, active communities. And we have really focused on community organizing at the local level so that people can come together locally and really live in community of open intelligence, enjoying the satisfaction and fulfillment of open-ended knowledge creation and benefit creation. And so, too, sometimes this sense of isolation and loneliness is responded to in our nature by being in community with others who are enjoying an open intelligence lifestyle, who are enjoying all of the four mainstays, the practice of short moments and the teacher and all the very rich training media that Terry was referring to, and the worldwide community. When we look at our Google Analytics, we see Sweden completely covered with balanced view community, so we don't even see Sweden. We only see open intelligence. there are so many dots all over the country of Sweden.
There are quite a range of questions, but there are two more that are sort of in line with these first two, and I'd like to ask both of them at the same time, and then we can move on to some other types of questions. But Julie from Austin asks, how do I let everything be as it is regarding not having enough income and to cover the simple cost of living? How does rest fit into the necessity of paying bills? And then another somewhat related question, oops, from Rochelle, except, yeah, here we go. How does one allow open intelligence in the midst of overwhelming data, such as overwhelming fear or anxiety attacks? Does one just stop the data stream and stand outside of it as the witness, or does one enter it and allow the experience to be as it is without interference?
Rochelle, allow the experience to be as it is without interference. Exactly that. The witness, too, is part of the data flow. And so the witness and the witness of the overwhelming anxiety or the fear or whatever may be felt, the lack of resources, the lack of actual money, all of this to allow it to be as it is without interference. It is a great, great paradox that this is the source of abundance. When we have been trained to feel that we have to fight against a lack of abundance, that we have to do something to stop it immediately, that may be the case. However, we will do that most intelligently, succinctly, precisely, and potently from open intelligence. And there, too, our actions will not only be of benefit to ourselves, but to everyone as well. I understand these questions deeply and completely, too, on a personal level. You know, these are all part of my own life experience. And so all of us live with these, Rochelle and Julie. Not just you are feeling these things, but many, 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 many beings everywhere are experiencing the same flow of data. And the word communion comes to my mind because it is the collective experience of the extreme pessimism and negativity, and to come out of the isolation of that. But you see, by allowing it to be as it is, it automatically is no longer isolated as a self-concern. It is the flow of all beings, and not just us as individuals, not just us as Candace or Rochelle or Julie or Terry or whoever it may be listening in.
So if Julie can't get enough money to pay her basic living expenses, maybe she has to... Maybe she loses the place she's living in, you know, has to move out of the place she's living in. I'm trying to think in terms of operationalizing this, how your response relates. You're essentially saying, number one, I would think that this would bring about a kind of self-compassion, that you're not the only one who feels these kinds of pressures. There's people all over the world who might be homeless or losing their place to live. And also, the more I release into open intelligence, the more I can relate to this in a way that's not so anxious that I'm obstructing my ability to respond creatively. Is that implicit then in what you've said as well? And how does that amount to a practical response of meeting her in her experience that she can use?
That was what you stated was beautiful and complete, Terry. I don't think I need to add anything to it at all. It's indeed in the richness, entering into the richness of the experience itself, that a more complete response is available, and that is as it is, that a more complete response is available. And we don't know what that's going to be yet, but we do know that a more complete response is available in open intelligence.
Thank you. Well, now I want to take a moment to hear from a live caller, and I don't know your name, but I know that you have a 978 area code that seems to be from Acton, Massachusetts, and I've just unmuted you. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Terry. This is Joe Caracanito.
Hello, Joe.
Hi. Thank you. And my question is actually looking for a little more expounding on the direction you were going in when you were talking about your dog. In my experience, it seems even on the cutting edge of the evolutionary community, there's still a very human-centric view. People talk about how the universe is coming conscious of itself for the very first time in us, as meaning humans, I think. And my perception is that that's a little egotistical, and that other beings, not even necessarily animals, but plants, and, are coming conscious as well. And some of them may even have beat us to the punch that we don't really know. So I was wondering if you could talk about that. When you talked about how many intelligences are viewing in on what we're doing, I'll go a little further with that.
Yes, I really understand what you're saying, Joe. I completely understand what you're saying. And I think it's just natural with the way we're trained as human beings to have at least part of our view be anthropocentric, because we are human beings. We are anthro. And so it's naturally that we be centered on that in some way. We aren't entirely disassociating from that. But what we realize, as you stated, is that there is a lot that we don't know. And there are all kinds of intelligent entities everywhere, those that we know and those that we don't know. And I would say that that is part of a basic kind of well-grounded humility that comes into the actual view of open intelligence, that we are among many intelligent entities, some that we know and some that we don't know, and that we're in the process of becoming more interactive and interoperable with all kinds of intelligences that we have yet to explore, including our own.
Well, thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank
yeah.
you. That was good.
Was there something else you wanted to say?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay.
Well.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Joe. There are a number of questions here that people have typed in that I want to bring up. One of them comes from Lynn in Denver, who asks, can one be given the gift of open-ended knowledge or open intelligence perhaps for a week or two? I spent 2 weeks in the present moment years ago, and everything in my life was clear, calm, and present. It left me. And I've been practicing meditation and yoga ever since in search of that knowledge, but I haven't been in that condition since.
Lynn, yes, as human beings, we have many experiences, and I understand from what you're saying that you had an experience of 2 weeks where everything came together for you, and you felt very present and oriented in everything that you did. And now you have been seeking for that experience again. And I want to acknowledge, first of all, your commitment and to be of benefit to yourself and to be of benefit to everyone through your practice of meditation and yoga. And to know that by relaxing and opening up the potency of open intelligence in this very moment, by relying on that in this very moment, for short moments, repeated many times, it will become obvious to you at all times. And it may not be, in fact, it probably will not be the same sense that you had when you had your experience of 2 weeks, because that was then and this is now. So now you feel the fresh and newly present Lynn in open intelligence, the potency of your own open intelligence in the here and now as it automatically self-releases, just like this jet flying overhead. Can you hear that? Well, there's a jet that is flying overhead, and the jet flew in very low, much lower than I have ever heard a jet fly in here. And the sound of the jet, it passes without a trace. And so each here and now passes in the same way, like the flight path of a jet or a bird in the flight path of a bird in the sky. And there, open intelligence has no destination. It is inexhaustible, unending. So there's no experience to return to or no experience to get to. There is only your own bright, very fulfilled and satisfied open intelligence right now.
Thank you. Carolyn in the UK asks, I have heard that data and open intelligence are inseparable, And yet many times you say that it is preferable to live from open intelligence than to living from data. Can you clarify this for me? Because it seems like you've said two different things.
Yes.
That they're inseparable and that it's preferable to live from open intelligence rather than from data.
They are inseparable. And it's simply that by allowing open intelligence into the picture where it already is anyway, it allows our perception of data to be balanced. Thus, we have a balanced view. The view of lucid open intelligence is called balanced because it is capable of quickly correcting all the wrong knowledge we might have and replacing it with correct knowledge, correct logic and reason. And so it allows us to be with all data as they actually are, inseparably. And so if I may have led you to the conclusion that I was preferencing open intelligence over data, I was not doing that. I want to be very clear about that. It's simply that open intelligence is given its place in data.
I had thought that in previous study of your work, you were helping me return to open intelligence and relax my exclusive focus on any particular point of view, that I would recognize every point of view as, you know, recognize that the real nature of every point of view is open intelligence. And therefore, I would think that since you were equating data and points of view, that I would be recognizing all data as open intelligence. And therefore, in a sense, I would tend not to be liberated from the data by focusing on the data, but liberated from its limiting implications by recognizing the open intelligence that is its very nature. Clearly, they're inseparable, but if I see it, if I'm oriented to it and from it in a way that begins to become exclusive, I need the open intelligence to liberate myself from it. So there is a kind of preference of open intelligence in that sense, isn't there?
Well, there may be if it occurs to you in that way, but it certainly doesn't occur to me in that way. It's more like the sun evaporating mist from space, so that it allows for all data to be as they are and to within open intelligence as the liveliness of open intelligence. It gives a correct perspective of what is occurring rather than an incorrect perspective.
Beautiful. Well, Candace, can you stay long enough for one last question? And this is just a very practical one. There are quite a few lovely questions here that I'm not going to have time to ask, so I'm sorry to those who asked them. But this one is kind of very particular, and it seems useful to bring this to bear in a very practical way. Daniel asks, how do you think treatment of people with mental illnesses like schizophrenia will change as recognition of open intelligence in the forefront in society as a whole? Do you have any advice to give to me as a caretaker of a young person suffering from schizophrenia? And Daniel's from Sweden, and he says, thank you, love you and your teaching very much.
Oh, thank you, Daniel. And thank you for giving so much love and care to the person in your life who has been labeled as a schizophrenic. I do feel very strongly that, you know, in our work we have all kinds of people come with all kinds of labels that have been applied to them by different types of diagnostic and statistical tools used by the psychiatric and psychological communities. And I do feel as open intelligence enters in, we enter into a new way of practicing human nature and a new way of allowing all kinds of human nature. And thus we're better able to know how to respond to specific situations as they occur. That may seem outside the normal flow of data, and this is one of the areas where a great deal is being learned, and I know that in our own practice, just the practice of short moments has allowed people who have very significant, who feel and experience very significant disturbances, mental disturbances. The practice of short moments has given many people a new kind of freedom in relation to what their experience is, a new kind of freedom that does not occur when a person is strictly labeled as being schizophrenic or manic depressive or whatever they may be. So the important point here and the key point is that all people, all beings, whoever they are rooted in open intelligence as their source and origin. And the data flow, whatever it is the liveliness of that open intelligence. And to normalize with your friend the flow of their data can give incredible freedom. To normalize the flow by relying on open intelligence. And then your friend, with your support and the support of others, can perhaps see solutions that did not occur before, see solutions to the situation and the circumstance that were not available prior to open intelligence entering in. For many of the people we work with, where there have been labels applied to them for all of their life, there is great, great freedom experienced upon finding that these are labels. These are simply labels and a set of conceptual frameworks that have been applied to an individual. And then there is an agreement between the practitioners of the type of model and the person who accepts that label. There's a tacit agreement that is entered into that the person will live within that conceptual framework of whatever it might be. Schizophrenia, manic depression. And so to allow open intelligence to enter in allows a greater space of operational mobility, a greater space of solution orientation, a greater space of tenderness, love, and care, a greater space of correct responsivity to what is actually occurring for this person in their life, and an openness outside of but inclusive of the labels that have been applied, because of course the labels have been part of the person's life and may still to some degree be part of the person's life. But in open intelligence there is such a hearty response, such an ability to respond, that just isn't present in the world of labeling. where these labels are, have an independent nature, force, and power of their own. They're treated as such. They're treated as though they have an independent nature, force, and power of their own, and they do not. They do not have an independent nature. Open intelligence is the nature of these labels. And so to expand beyond the labels is to enter the world of open intelligence, to expand beyond the reification of these labels, the reification that insists that these labels are true, that they are an accurate description of a person and that that's all the person is, to expand with the power of open intelligence beyond that limited view, beyond that, you could even say conspiracy, to limit a person to a certain conceptual framework of who they are and how they feel. So again, you know, we have seen incredible and dramatic response of people opening up beyond the labels that have been applied to them all their life.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Candace. Well, I want to keep going, but I can see by the clock we are out of time. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Candace.
Thank you, Gary.
Well, great. Thank you. Before we open the lines and we all say goodbye, just a couple of reminders. If you value what you're receiving here, please support our work by letting others know about it, and they can register for this series at beyondawakeningseries.com. And if you're interested in learning more about Candace O'Denver, please go to balancedview.org. You're also invited to go to terrypatton.com to sign up for my personal mailing list and newsletter. And if you click events, you'll find out about the June event in Canada on integral leadership, the Amazon journey in July out of Manaus, Brazil, and the integral community event in Colorado in August, and more. And now some detail about what's going to be coming up here on Beyond Awakening. In 2 weeks, on May 13th, at our regular time, 10 a.m. Pacific, I'll be talking with John Bunzel, the London-based integral activist who has been championing SIMPOL, S-I-M-P-O-L, Simultaneous Policy. It's a remarkable new approach to political activism that empowers local initiatives to have global impacts. Then on May 26th, 2 weeks after that, I'll be speaking with the renowned visionary artist Alex Gray, who's widely known for his revelatory artworks, making use of his uncanny ability to picture the human energy body with all the detail and specificity of medical illustrations. On July 10th, I'll be having a follow-up conversation with Michael Murphy, the founder of Esalen and the creator of Integral Transformative Practice and the author of The Future of the Body and Golf in the Kingdom. Thank you so much for joining Candace and me today. Let's open up our phone lines, and we can all say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.